So today we're beginning a new message series entitled Ultimate Questions. And I hope as we go along through this that you'll share some more of your ultimate questions with me. If you want to do that, you can just use the little tear-off sheet on the bulletin and you can write down some of your questions. I still have some room at the end of the series, at the end of this summer, to include some additional questions. So I'd love to hear from you. You can just write it on the tear-off sheet and give it back to us during the offering, and that'll get to me. But today we are talking about perhaps the biggest question of all: is there a God? Now I realize that I'm preaching to the choir, not just that choir, but all of you are the choir when it comes to this question today. You probably would not be here today if you didn't believe there was a God, but even those of us who believe have questions. And so I hope that today I'll touch on at least maybe one question you've had or still have about God. And maybe if not today, at some point in the series. But let me acknowledge from the outset that I do not believe we can prove the existence of God. It's not something we can bring God into the laboratory and say, here, let me test you. Oh, let me run you through that test one more time. You know, that's simply not possible to do. As C.S. Lewis once wrote to a young agnostic, Sheldon Van Auken, he said, I do not think there is a demonstrative proof, like Euclid, of Christianity, nor of the existence of matter, nor of the goodwill and honesty of my best and oldest friends. I think all three are, except perhaps the second, far more probable than the alternatives. As to why God doesn't make it demonstratively clear, are we sure that He is even interested in the kind of theism which would be a compelled logical assent to a conclusive argument? Are we interested in it in personal matters? I demand from my friend a trust in my good faith, which is certain without demonstrative proof. It wouldn't be confidence at all if we waited for rigorous proof. Hang it all, Lewis says. The very fairy tales embody the truth. Othello believed in Desdemona's innocence when it was proved, but that was too late. Lear believed in Cordelia's love when it was proved, but that was too late. His praise is lost, who stays till all commend. The magnanimity, the generosity which will trust on a reasonable probability is required of us. So I will offer no proof for the existence of God. What I do offer to you today are some pointers I've discovered along my own life's journey. And I imagine if I went around this morning and asked each of you, why do you believe in God? You could offer some pointers I maybe haven't even thought of, or some that we don't even have time to touch on today. But for my part, I grew up in a Christian home. I don't know where I would be today if I hadn't. I might not believe in God at all if I'd been brought up in an atheist home. But of course, I also believe in God because I've been talking to Him for as long as I can remember. But even though I grew up in that sort of environment, by the age of 13, I was already questioning the existence of God, and I was reading whatever I could get my hands on in order to find answers. And though I feel like I've found some answers, my search still hasn't ceased, and probably won't in this life. So what evidence is there for God? Well, I guess I would start by saying that the evidence is all around us. Creation itself suggests a creator. Paul says the same thing in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. For what can be known about God is plain, because God has shown it. Ever since the creation of the world, His eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through what He has made. And as I think about it, I believe there's at least five things that we see in creation that suggest there is a God. First, we have design. It's even more notable in nature than in the artifacts that intelligent humans make. The design of the universe suggests there is a designer. Psalm 19 puts it this way, "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims His handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world." Albert Einstein once said, "My religion consists of a humble adoration of the illimitable superior spirit who reveals Himself in the slight details we are able to perceive with our frail and feeble minds." That deeply emotional conviction of the presence of a superior reasoning power, which is revealed in the incomprehensible universe, forms my idea of God. And in some ways, I like even better what Professor Edwin Carlston from Princeton University once said, "The probability of life originating from accident is comparable to the probability of the unabridged dictionary resulting from an explosion in a printing factory." A watch presupposes a watchmaker. In the same way, the intricate order and design of the universe presupposes a creator. So that's one. A second pointer to the existence of God is personality. Either there was a personal beginning to the universe or an impersonal one. Some people have suggested the world began from nothing. Is that logical? Can you get something from nothing? And if the first cause was impersonal, then how did personal beings like us result? You cannot get A from negative A. And so I believe there must have been a personal beginning to the universe. God. Francis Schaeffer once wrote, "If we begin with the impersonal, then how do any of the particulars that now exist, including man, have any meaning, any significance?" Nobody has given us an answer to that. Beginning with the impersonal, everything, including man, must be explained in terms of the impersonal plus time plus chance. No one has ever demonstrated how time plus chance, beginning with an impersonal, can produce the needed complexity of the universe, let alone the personality of man. But if we begin with a personal beginning, and this is the origin of all else, then the personal does have meaning, and man and his aspirations are not meaningless. Schaeffer goes on to explore the philosophical implications of that personal beginning. He says, once we've asked that question, is there a God, and answered it, then we have the choice of God or gods. I remember when I was personally asking that question, is there one God or many gods? I must have been studying Greek mythology in school at the time. And the thing that always kept coming into my mind was the idea of hierarchy. Even if there are many gods, there must be one God who is above all else, above those lesser gods. That seemed to be the way of it, even in polytheistic religions. And whenever the mind explores the question of the origin of the universe, we're always trying to press our way further back. Further back. But whatever is furthest back is either personal or impersonal. And if personal, then God. And only a personal, infinite God satisfies the demand of the universe to have a sufficient ground for ultimate values. As Schaefer points out, we also need a personal unity in diversity in God. We see this in everyday life, don't we? America is becoming an ever more diverse society. The question is, how do we preserve unity in our diversity? What is going to hold our nation together and keep us from coming apart at the seams with racial, political, and religious divisions? Going back to Einstein, he taught that the whole material world may be reduced to electromagnetism and gravity. And at the end of his life, he was searching for a unity between the two. But he never found it. Einstein, I believe, was really searching for answers that lie beyond the realm of science. At one point in time, he lived just down the street from my alma mater, Princeton Seminary. Not at the same time as I was there, I might add. But I think that was one of the first historic buildings I went to see in Princeton and found the plaque on the outside of the house. And as the story goes, he used to attend chapel services at Princeton Seminary. I think he was definitely searching for answers to the ultimate questions of life. But what if Einstein had found something that would unite electromagnetism and gravity? It would only have been a unity in diversity with respect to the material world. And the need for unity and diversity with respect to personality would not have been met. But though this is a little further afield than my sermon for today, I would suggest to you that the Christian idea of the Trinity, one God in three persons, meets that need for personal unity in diversity. A third pointer to the existence of God is reason. It appears that we are rational creatures, but how did reason result from an impersonal beginning? How do we get purpose out of chaos? Again, I find Lewis helpful at this point, mainly because he lived a good part of his young life as an atheist. But then he finally concluded atheism turns out to be too simple. Why? If the whole universe has no meaning, we should never have found out that it has no meaning. Just as if there were no light in the universe and therefore no creatures with eyes, we should never know it was dark. Dark would be without meaning. And following the same line of thought, I think we can say the statement, "There is no reason," is itself unreasonable. And the existence of reason suggests a reasoning power behind the universe. The Greeks called it the Logos. A fourth pointer to God is the existence of morality. And I know whenever this is brought up, people say, but haven't many different cultures had many different moralities? Well, there have been some differences, yes, but nothing amounting to a total difference In fact, the striking thing when you study every major civilization down through human history is all of the commonalities in terms of morality. You could take the last six of the Ten Commandments that we have in our Bibles and you could see those six reflected in every civilization that has ever existed. Where does it come from? How do we explain it? How do we derive values out of time plus chance plus the impersonal? And then we all have a thing called conscience. It may not be an infallible guide, but it points to standards that we ought to keep. Why is it there? Where did it come from? I doubt it can be fully explained by social conditioning. Because doesn't the conscience point us away from what is to what should be? And that inner law suggests a lawgiver. And then a fifth pointer to God. And this perhaps is my favorite. The existence of desire. The fact that we have a desire or a longing, and I think most people have experienced this, a desire or longing for something or someone that cannot be satisfied by anything or anyone in this world, suggests that there is something or someone outside of this world who can satisfy it. Now, one of the great poets whom I love and respect once said, "Being hungry doesn't prove we have bread." That was Matthew Arnold. But being hungry does suggest there is such a thing as food, don't you think? Ecclesiastes 3:11 says that God has also set eternity in the hearts of men. We all have a desire for timelessness. I mean, haven't you had a moment here or there in your life that while it was happening, you felt it was eternal? Or at least you wished it was eternal, that it would go on forever? Blaise Pascal, a 17th century French mathematician, put it this way in his book, Pensée. "What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness, of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace? This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are, though none can help. Since this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God himself, God alone is man's true good." But all of this leaves us still wanting to know, if there is a God, what is God like? And getting back to Paul in Romans 1, he suggests that we all know from creation not only that there is a God, but we know something of what God is like. He says, "God's eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made." So God is eternal. There must be a first cause, something or someone who's always existed, because you can't get something from nothing. Psalm 90 puts it this way, "Before the mountains were born or you were brought forth, the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God." And in Revelation 1, we read, "I am the Alpha and the Omega, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty." By looking at creation, we also see that God is powerful. Don't we see that even in the natural disasters that happen in the world? Don't we feel a sense of that power when we stand at the beach and we hear the crashing of the ocean waves? Jeremiah 32:27, God asks this rhetorical question. I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me? No. By definition, God is all-powerful. And a third characteristic we can discern, even by looking at creation, is that God is personal. I've already touched on this, that personality, something we possess as human beings, suggests that personal creator. Even though maybe the most popular spiritual slogan of our time is, may the force be with you. No, God is something more than an impersonal force. He is the personal power behind the sun and the moon and the stars and the planets. I remember talking to a Hindu man on the island of Grenada many years ago after giving a sermon at a school there in which I talked about Jesus. And we talked about the nature of God, and he said how he believed in many gods. You know, the God of the sun and the moon and the stars and this and that and the other thing. And I said, well, we Christians believe that God is the personal power behind all of those lesser gods. And he kind of looked at me and he thought for a moment. And he said, yes, that makes sense. All in a moment, he was converted from Hinduism to a kind of belief in a personal God. A fourth characteristic of God suggested by creation is holiness. Morality and conscience suggest a lawgiver. The God who is the God who takes sides. He's the ultimate someone who is for righteousness and against unrighteousness. And don't we have something within us that cries out for justice in our world today? That cry is answered by a holy God. Exodus 15:11 asks, who among the gods is like you, O Lord? Who is like you? Majestic in holiness, awesome in glory, working wonders. And because we believe in a holy God, he also asks us to be holy as he is. Be holy because I am holy. And then a fifth and final characteristic of God I think we can discern from creation without ever picking up a Bible. God is beautiful. God must be beautiful because creation is beautiful. And how could there be an ugly God behind the creation of the rich hues of the Grand Canyon? Or the white sand beaches of the Bahamas, or the majestic grandeur of the Alps. David says in Psalm 27, one thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon, what? The beauty of the Lord, and to seek Him in His temple. At the beginning, I quoted C.S. Lewis and his letter to a young agnostic. So allow me to close with a quote from that young agnostic, Sheldon Van Auken, in a delightful little booklet he wrote entitled Encounter with Light, that talks about his journey from atheism to faith in God. And he describes part of that journey in this way. He says the next step was agnosticism, not knowing, and skeptical about the possibility of knowing. And yet almost at the same time I began to think that perhaps one could know a little. Geometry with its unprovable but self-evident axioms provided a clue. Were there any axioms having to do with the meaning of things? I decided that something had created the universe. This was self-evident, axiomatic. And then I applied myself to the consideration of whether there were any self-evident indications of the nature of this first cause. And I perceived order. These were, of course, well-worn ways I was treading, but they were new to me. It began to seem axiomatic that the power that made the universe was intelligent and infinite. Order must be a function of intelligence, and only infinite intelligence could comprehend the infinities of space and time. A very great awareness of beauty, coupled with the recognition that everything was beautiful except where marred by man, persuaded me that beauty was a reflection of the beauty of the power. And so it has seemed to me in my own search, and to the majority of humankind down through history, that the existence of design and personality and reason and morality all point to God. And by looking at creation, we see God's attributes: eternality, power, personality, holiness, beauty. But that's about as far as we can go, looking at creation. Unless God does one more thing, and that is to reveal Himself. Because as Job says, can you fathom the mysteries of God? Can you probe the limits of the Almighty? No. But what if we think about God as the author of a great play? And we think of this universe and its history as the play itself. Could not God write Himself in as a character in the play? That's the question we'll take up next week. For now, let us pray to the God who is there and who is not silent. Let us pray. Dear God, I don't know about each of my friends here, but I know for me, the sense of your existence and presence seems innate. I've been talking to you for as long as I can remember. And despite my many questions, I keep coming back to you for answers. We thank you that you are not only the God who is evident in what He has made. You are the God who reveals some of who you are through your creation. But we thank you that you have revealed something more of yourself in ways we will talk about more as we proceed through this time of contemplation together this summer. For now, we give you thanks for who you are and for the fact that you are still speaking. You are always speaking. Help us to listen, for we ask it in your name. Amen.